Welcome to day two of the road cycling program at the 2020 Tokyo Summer Paralympic Games. A
cloudy day. 180 days, 25 weeks. That's the amount of time two-season Paralympians have had between medal contests. Roughly a quarter of the usual turnaround.
Because Oksana Masters of the United States, gold medal in the time trial, is about to win the gold medal in the road race. She wins the elusive double and one of the great performances.
So while the results in Tokyo came down to just mere hundredths of a second, for some athletes, the end of one race signified the beginning of another, with 4,320 hours to go as they sought to do it all over again. This time on the snow.
A very warm welcome to you from the hills high above Beijing as the Zhangjiakou National Biathlon Center welcomed the Nordic athletes going for gold at the 2022 Winter Paralympic Games. It's a bright, crisp morning.
A race
here.
Saw some of the world's most elite athletes showcase their adaptability as they changed their form, gear, and outlook, all to stay atop the Paralympic podium in Beijing.
Oksana Masters, absolutely fantastic performance. Quick in the ski and clean in the range. Looking like a gold medal display.
On this episode of The Podium, Paralympic peaking in record time. From NBC Sports, this is The Podium, a podcast about the 2022 Beijing Winter Paralympic Games. I'm your host, Mallory Whiteman, bringing to you stories of determination and perseverance. Elite athletes that are carving what is possible on ice and snow for all.
Gold medalist and Paralympic champion, representing the United States of America. 金メダリストおよびパラリンピックチャンピオン、アメリカ合衆国、Kendall Gretsch.
Kendall Gretsch won gold in her Summer Paralympics debut, racing to the finish as she pulled ahead of her nearest competitor, reigning world champion Lauren Parker of Australia, by nearly 1 second in the final meters of the triathlon. Oksana Masters rolled through the H5 cycling finish line at Fuji Speedway to capture her 10th Paralympic medal. Gold, of course. As both women stood on the podium, having accomplished the delicate dance of maintaining their form for an additional year following the unexpected delay due to the pandemic, the medal around their necks proudly announced the arrival of perhaps an even greater challenge.
I did not work on a break, and that's probably why I was in frantic, chaotic anxiety, just freaking out every day, because I did not allow myself, because of my problem is with the breaks, even if I'm not training, or like, okay, I'm gonna have these 3 days to not do anything. All I'm thinking about is why am I not doing this, and that there's someone in another country that is training right now and I'm not.
It's a pretty uncomfortable period where you just don't feel great, but I think you kind of just have to trust that it's gonna come.
Right after the road race in Tokyo, I was in the gym doing all my cross-country workouts.
Gretsch or Masters, Gretsch or Masters, and it's going to be Gretsch. By 8.7 seconds, Oksana Masters is a Winter Paralympic champion in the para biathlon. Masters, the master, undisputed.
My name is Kendall Gretsch. I'm from the United States, and I just won the bronze medal in the women's sitting biathlon sprint.
Oksana Masters from Team USA, and I just most recently won a silver medal in the cross country long and a surprisingly shocking gold in the biathlon sprint.
Oksana, Kendall, first of all, thank you so much for joining us. And congratulations on your 13th and 5th Paralympic medals, respectively. You're both now a part of the exclusive group of U.S. women to win gold at both the Summer and Winter Paralympics, which is just outstanding. How would you describe your last 6 months?
Oh, the last 6 months have been so chaotic. I'm not going to lie. It was filled with a whole lot of self-doubt and anxiety and nerves and excitement all wrapped into one. trying to make sure you're feeding the right set of the excited anxiety, not the nervous one, and not to doubt yourself, knowing that your competitor has been training 4 years nonstop for the specific events, and you just had like about 5 months from basically on time on snow, and it's exciting, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like the last 6 months have gone by really quickly. I always feel that about the Nordic season, like in comparison to the triathlon season, it just seems so short. But yeah, after Tokyo, I really wanted to take a bit of a mental break more than anything, to make sure that I was ready to gear up for another game so close. So yeah, I took like a really solid 2 weeks off and just really did nothing, like was with friends and family for most of it, and kind of had a chance to be more of a regular scheduled human. And yeah, but then after that kind of jumped right into Nordic training. So yeah, we had some early season camps to get onto snow as soon as possible. I think that's always the most important thing as a winter athlete and getting on snow. So yeah, we went over to Germany and we were skiing there. We spent about 2 months in Canada training up there to get on snow early. And then since then, we've just been kind of full speed ahead with our racing season.
You know, in preparation for these games and looking back to Tokyo, which, as you said, I mean, it was just 6 months ago. Did you factor Beijing into your Tokyo preparation?
You know, I didn't really. I kind of was like, knew that I just had to be fully committed to the triathlon training. And I think, yeah, I mean, I think it's unprecedented to have the two games so close together, but we switch every season between the two sports. And so there is some amount of comfort in that it wasn't like, this is something I've never done before. I've done it for the last 4 years.
So I have my coach in cycling, and he's actually Ralph Lichtenberg. I can never pronounce his last name. He's in Germany, and he had the best mapped out plan for me for Tokyo, especially after kind of the surprise health things that I had that made it an extra challenge to try. So I never really got to focus on my transition plan from cross country for Tokyo to cross country skiing for Beijing, because I was in panic mode of trying to how to recover from the surgery and then still try and get the unfinished business there in Tokyo.
And look at you, ladies, you both did it. And now we're here. Let's talk a little bit about that physical transition. Can you build off of your summer fitness going into winter? Or are there things that you fundamentally have to change about your training and preparation from one to the other?
Yeah, so like in cycling, I tend to, it's also very different because my coach doesn't really believe in getting like strength from the gym. It's more specific strength from the bike. And on the bike, you're able to kind of control your efforts more because you're basing off of watts. And in skiing, it's complete opposite. We're in the gym 2 to 3 times a week, and you're trying to, it's more about injury prevention and keeping strong. And it's totally, when we do our body mass index and our comps on our body comps, my body, it's so much stronger on my shoulders and my chest. And then when a cross country season comes, I have to rebuild those lats because I don't, in the way that I ride my bike, I don't really use my lats in the same way. It's more like doing a plank and pushing motion.
Yeah, so for me, I feel like the endurance and cardio fitness that you gain between the two sports translates, but the sport-specific muscles don't. And so, yeah, like specifically talking, going from triathlon to skiing, like I just need to build up so much more strength for the ski season. So yeah, there's kind of this period at the beginning of the season where like my cardio fitness just doesn't match up with where my ski muscles are at. So you have to be really careful because it can be really easy to go too hard because like you feel like you're maybe not working that hard if you look at like your heart rate or something. But yeah, then your muscles are just like completely trashed. So yeah, it's just trying to find that balance of, or like working towards the point where like your cardio fitness and your muscular strength for the sport match up. And that just takes time.
So you're really reconstructing your whole entire body. And to do that within 6 months is a little bit like, I'm not gonna lie, I was like, why am I doing this? Like, should I just not do this? But what I try to do is, when I'm in my cycling season, I try to keep my skiing muscles awake. So that means just like either just 30 minutes to an hour easy erging or roller skiing, or like doing something in the gym that's keeping my lats awake, but not strong and powerful yet. And it's definitely, I don't know what's harder, trying to transform your body from one sport to the other, or your mind in that process of that transformation and just staying present and following through with the plan and know it's going to work out and know the trust the years that you've had and that it has worked out, you can do it. It's a lot of, it's a fine balance of like almost harder to transform your mind mentally than it is physically.
A balance that both of you are speaking of, and one that I'm sure factors into how your teams communicate. So what does that look like in terms of your coaches from summer to winter, and how they communicate to bring this plan together and help facilitate that for you?
Yeah, so I do have separate like triathlon and Nordic coaches, but they're in communication with each other throughout the entire year. So my Nordic coach always knows what I'm doing throughout the triathlon season, and vice versa, the triathlon coach keeps up with me during the Nordic season. I think the other key piece is that there's other support staff on my team that like cross over. So my strength coach I work with year round. And so, yeah, he's just another piece of the puzzle that's kind of bridging the gap between the two sports. I mean, kind of like the main training is separate from different coaches.
My coaches do communicate. So Ralph was communicating with my coaches on the Nordic side, kind of knowing like what my training's looking like, what I'm doing. But to be honest, the training is so different. I mean, in Tokyo, it was a 3-hour road race, and the time trial was about 40 minutes long. And it's just very, very different, opposite muscle groups entirely. And it was just trying to, that first transition right after you just come off a peak season from your cycling season to skiing, it's like as if you've never worked out once in your life. And it's just the scariest month ever to just not doubt yourself and trust the process.
Oksana, your wins in Beijing are both the product of navigating a very short turnaround, all while playing the long game. You've said that not making the Beijing Games in 2008 on the summer side gave you a lot of fuel. Who was Oksana then, and how has your inner athlete evolved since?
Oksana trying to go to 2008 was very just determined, angry, and just wanted to prove everyone wrong that said that you will not be able to be an athlete, and just was maybe just like using the wrong things to fuel her in some ways. And now going into 2022 and hopefully beyond, now in Beijing, just a confident Oksana, Oksana that has an incredible village of support. And I know that I would not have been able to be here and continue, even dream of continuing on for more Paralympic Games if it wasn't for that support behind me. And I think the biggest difference is I was not a confident Oksana back in the day, and I am a very confident one now. Regardless of result, I'm confident in what I can do and can work for.
You talk about support, and that is such an important component of this. And your boyfriend, Aaron Pike, and I love that you guys have the hashtag PikeSana, but he also pivoted from the Summer Paralympics to the winter in a record time as well. Was it helpful navigating through that together?
He's so much cooler and calmer. He's a cooler cucumber when transitions happen, and he's just so much better than I am. I'm like that, he's the cool, calm yang, and I'm that one chaotic, frantic, second-guess everything yang, and combo together, he bounces me out. And watching him not sweat and stress and get too anxious about his transition and like only controlling what you can and just do the workout within that day definitely helps me. And I think in his sport, it's very different because, and I think Aaron is just incredible because I competed in summer for cycling, and then transitioned for in the winter. But Aaron went from track and field, wheelchair racing, track events, and then had a full marathon season after Tokyo, and then transitioned. And so it kind of kept me like, it was exciting to watch him and just like, okay, if he's doing this, I can do this. And he's just incredible because his mind is so strong. And so like for me, my weakness is I think my mind sometimes in that transition. And for him, his mind is a strength sometimes. And it's just really cool to see his strengths and try to find how I can apply them to make them my strengths as well.
Navigating that has to be such a neat thing to be able to do that together and have that energy feed off of one another. And you guys live together as well. What does the house look like having two professional athletes who are both dual sport athletes living there? I mean, equipment, all of it. What is that like?
It looks like an organized mess in the basement. So it just looks like just a bomb just went off of just equipment. So we have, like, he has his racing chair, my hand cycle, both of our skis, our rifles, ski ergs, and skis and poles are just, it's everywhere. The garage and the gym and the basement is just, it's exciting, but you're like, oh my gosh, why do we have all this stuff? Do we need to do this? And then like, he's got three racing chairs, and then sometimes we're like arguing a light way, like, oh my gosh, Aaron, do you really need three wheelchair racing chairs here? Or like, do I really need these two bikes here and or multiple skis? And that's our life. All our friends who come in, they see skis, poles, bikes, wheelchair racing equipment, and wheels. Oh my God, we got wheels like there's for days. Oh my gosh, tires for days, which is really, really nice to be able to do, to live with me in a relationship with someone who's also like their sport. Some of the equipment kind of crosses over from my cycling equipment, so we kind of can borrow each other's equipment sometimes, which is nice.
And for both of you, it's not like you're simply going from Tokyo to Beijing and there's nothing in between. You still had to make the team, and there was an entire competitive season between the two, all in that very short 6-month period of time. So Kendall, I mean, tell us a little bit about what was that schedule like?
Yeah, so I guess Tokyo was end of August. And yeah, we have our first World Cup for the Nordic season this year, beginning of December. So yeah, you really just have a couple months to make that transition. But I would say that like we have those World Cups and you're trying to be there and be competitive, but you know that those World Cups aren't necessarily the goal for the season. So you're at them and you're competing and trying to gain, you know, experience and value from that, but thinking of it a little bit more as like training experience, knowing that like it's all building towards this year Beijing. So
it seems like you see this more on the Paralympic side than the Olympic side of athletes having that multi-sport crossover. Do you think it's something about Paralympians? I mean, we all know how well suited so many Paralympians are to just be adaptable. And does that play a factor into the ability to make that pivot from sport to sport?
Yeah, I think you definitely see it way more often in the Paralympics, athletes crossing over to different seasons and different sports. I think primarily because, well, yeah, I think as a Paralympian, every single person's resilient. They've had to overcome and learn how to adapt to their surroundings. And then when they start a sport, they learn how to adapt to their sport. And we're all very aware with our body in space and how we've come so used to knowing how to use our bodies. And equipment's one of those things that I think allows us to, in certain sports, make that transition because you're so used to using your body in that specific way, whether it's in your sport or whether it's just getting around on day to day within society too. And the challenging thing with Paralympians being able to do that transition from sport to sport or seasons is overuse injury is at a higher risk because we're only using our arms. We're only using that one specific muscle group. And then when you're done training in it and racing in it, then you have to go and get in and out of a car and get up and out of a chair and just overuse things. So your body's never truly getting that rest and you're at a higher risk at getting that injury than I think Olympians are.
Yeah, I think maybe. I think as athletes, you have to find like your form of resilience from somewhere. And for everyone, it comes from somewhere different. And I guess as someone growing up with a disability, like you do just get used to having that kind of adaptability and resilience built in. And yeah, like I wouldn't say I necessarily had huge struggles growing up, but yeah, there were things where, you know, I kind of just had to accept, like, okay, in gym class, I'm going to be the slowest person to be doing, you know, these different things, but like, I'm still going to do it. And, you know, I can be competitive with myself. And yeah, so you do, you kind of like year after year building up this resilience just in your daily life. And I think that translates to sport.
You talk about adaptability and resilience. What do you think is one of the things that others can learn from that journey? Just, I mean, elite athletics, but also day-to-day life and what you've learned over the years.
I mean, I think you learn the most when you fail at things. And it's really hard to do that. because, you know, no one likes to fail, but you can grow so much from those failures. And so pushing yourself to do things that are uncomfortable are, you know, is just going to help you to be able to achieve more, or, yeah, prove to yourself that you can do something that's unexpected or maybe something you didn't think you were capable of.
In the Paralympic movement, we talk so much about the fact that sport has the ability to transcend the field of play and serve as a catalyst for change in our society as we seek to change perception of disability. I myself, you know, as an individual living with a disability and as an athlete, there's kind of that two sides of the coin of how do we as individuals define ourselves? It often feels that society wants to see the prosthetics or the wheelchair first, but for many of us in the Paralympic movement and for many athletes like yourselves, that's just not the case of how we see ourselves. So for both of you, how is it that you want to be seen? What do you want people to know and think about when it comes to who you are as a person?
I'd like to think of, they would think I'm, you know, think of me as an athlete first. And yeah, I don't know.
honestly, I see myself as an athlete, period. Regardless which sport, and I didn't intend to do all these sports where you have to pick and choose how you identify, but I just see myself as an athlete and maybe a very dynamic athlete because I have done so many different sports and moving and it's just wild to identify as an athlete because I never ever in my dreams would ever imagine I would look in the mirror and think of myself athlete first and then Oksana second.
Follow The Podium now to get automatic downloads and tune into the networks of NBC to watch every moment of the 2022 Beijing Winter Paralympic Games.